It is an honor and a privilege to be here, and this is quite possibly my most favorite subject in the entire world, the feminine genius and the true dignity of women. It has indeed, in my own personal life, set me free, and anyway, I hope that you experience that same setting free with this teaching of the church and by experiencing this day, and continue to help build a culture in which women recognize their dignity and live it and live their genius in such a way that we change the world. So with that, thank you again for having me. Unlike a lot of talks that I give, the Holy Spirit was very adamant that this not be a written talk, that this need to come from my heart today, which is a little uncomfortable for me because I usually write everything out. And even if I don't read from it, I know it's already a prepared speech, but that's not what the Lord wanted for me today, and so I'm excited to see what He brings. As you heard, I am a mom of six, and a long, long time ago, over 22 years ago, my husband and I were really blessed because we met some people in a new town that we moved to in Southern California, and they were getting together and having this formation group, and the guys met with the guys, and the women met with the women. It was called Familia, Family Life in America. I don't know if any of you ever heard of it. I don't know where it is now. It was a lay apostolate of Regnum Christi, and it was really intense, but we didn't really know what we were getting into. It was this four-year program of study, and but you're only supposed to take 1 year at a time, which is a good thing, because if you told me I had to make it through 4 years, I'd have said, no way. But, you know, that was the biggest gift our marriage and our family got, because what it did is it provided a social setting in which my husband and I were able to delve into teachings of the church, like papal documents, the catechism, the scriptures, in a way I wouldn't have signed up to do. I wouldn't have done it independently. I mean, papal documents are thick. They're hard to get through. You know, like there's a sentence that's an entire paragraph long. And then by the time you get to the bottom of the sentence, you're like, well, I got to go back and reread that. I forgot what the first part of the sentence said. And they can be really dense and very difficult. And so it was a real blessing to be able to do this in company with other women and to do it slowly. Just, you know, a little bit of spoon feeding, if you will. But it was the most beautiful thing because it exposed me to ideas that the church wants to share with all of us about our vocations, the vocation to be a woman, the vocation of family. What is the constitution and the purpose of a family? What is the meaning of human work? That's what my husband studied. He studied about human fatherhood and work, and I studied motherhood and suffering and Mulieris Dignitatum, on the dignity and vocation of women, and Mary, diving deep with Mary and developing a relationship with her that our family did not have before. And so it was a really beautiful experience. After 4 years, I was like, whew, I'm glad that's done. That was a lot of work. But over the next decade, I came to miss that deep formation. I really wanted that. And I just was like, who has the time for that? Our family grew. We had four and then five children. And I didn't really have the time for it. And somebody turned me on to something called ENDOW. And ENDOW stands for Educating on the Nature and Dignity of Women. ENDOW is based in Denver, and it's a ministry to Catholic women. And if you haven't checked it out, I'm just going to give it a plug right now because I couldn't believe it. When I heard about ENDOW, I was like, how do they do this? They figured out how to get through an entire encyclical in 8 weeks. That's crazy. No homework? You're kidding me. And I was like, we did something wrong because we took a whole year to go through those documents. So anyway, I thought that was genius. And so I had to sign up, had to find out about it. I'm like, 8 weeks, no problem. So I signed up to be an ENDOW facilitator. And then we were homeschooling at the time and had only exclusively homeschooled. And we felt called, Mama needed a break. And so we felt called to find a good Catholic school for our kids. And so we took a few years off and enrolled our kids in Catholic school. Well, I didn't know anybody there. And so I went around with these ENDOW postcards. I started handing them out. And I just hoped that somebody would think it was a good idea. And 2 weeks later, 15 women were sitting in the living room of a legislator's house, by the way. He was a U.S. senator, but he let us use his living room. And we studied the letter to women. And you know something? The same thing that happened to me and those familiar groups so long ago happened to all those women in that meeting. And then I just got hooked. I loved to see women light up and their lives change and their hearts alight. When you read those words in the letter to women that say, thank you, women, thank you, women, thank you, women, the litany of thanksgiving over and over for all the ways that a woman lives out her vocation in the world and what salt and light it brings to families, to society, to sisters, to everywhere, to the places we work. And I just thought, wow, you know what? I saw it happen in all those same hearts. And I said, I got to do this again. Does that happen every time? And I got hooked, and I kept leading those groups. And it wasn't just letter to women. We would read about the Christian meaning of suffering. We would read about Humana Vitae. Really, really interesting. A lot of people think they know what the church teaches on the matters of life and human love, and they've never read the documents for themselves. But if they did, they would have a clarity and an understanding. I mean, those papal documents, they're like scripture. You know, they're meant to clarify matters of faith for us, but they speak to us in all time, in all eternity. You know what I mean? It's like for any age. And so I'm going to share with you some examples from some of those documents that really have impacted me along my journey, because I kept seeing that happen over and over again in women's lives. That group of women that I started off with, that first Endow group, most of us, well, except for me, I had 5 kids, and one woman had 6 kids, but everybody else had 1 or 2. By the time I left that group of ladies to themselves to lead their own Endow groups, well, I can tell you today, most of them have 6 kids or more. And you know something? That's the power of getting a small group of women together and supporting one another in faith. Where do we see that today? We don't see that today. You don't find that among your neighbors. It's not like, oh, I moved into this neighborhood and they're all pro-life here. You know, the culture is against us. And so we have to proactively go out and feed our souls with really good stuff, right? You know, this whole organic push and everything else. Well, we need organic faith, you know, not filtered through what the culture has to say or the media has to say about what the church believes, but to just really get it for ourselves. And so I would recommend, if you've never seen it or heard it or checked it out, go look up Endow. You don't have to do anything special. I think the studies are $30 or $40 a piece. You just buy one, they send it to you in the mail, and you get 5 or 6 girlfriends together and you study. You read out loud. There's no homework. You ask deep questions that matter to you and your life, your family, your vocation, your workplace, and they start to impact your life. And it's such a beautiful thing. So I'm just going to put a plug out there for that. Along the way, I sort of became an accidental activist. I didn't mean to be an activist, but you know what they say, when you know something, you're responsible for doing something about it. And so it's no secret, right? Our culture's sort of only been on a downhill slide for a really long time. So first it was life issues, right? You know, obviously the right to life is completely trampled in this country, and it only gets worse, and you think that it can't, and then it does. And finally, I said, I got to do something about that. So we would engage in 40 Days for Life as a family, or we would, you know, I started like doing protests and things outside of Planned Parenthood. I was like, oh gosh, you know, losing friends on Facebook and all that stuff. So great. It's like, yeah, I have family members that unfriended me and don't talk to me, but you know what? It's okay. There's a crown in heaven with a little extra something for that, and I am okay with that. Again, when you read the scripture and you read the church teaching, it's pretty clear. You know what? There isn't a cost that we can pay here that our Lord isn't going to repay us in spades, right? So anyway, so first it started with the life issues, and then it was marriage back in 2008. So every once in a while, my kids go through this thing with me as activist mommy. I'm not the activist mommy, but as an activist and a mommy, where they're like, mom's busy right now, and I'm at a desk with, you know, lists and making phone calls, and I got signs and banners or whatever. But it's fun, because it's fun to see how my kids are starting to manifest some of those things too. So it's good to do this kind of thing and have your kids see you put your faith in action. It's really good. Even though some of my kids, I mean, they all go to church still, even my adult kids. My kids are 21 down to 6. So they all know my lingo. They all start picking up the words and the language and everything, and it's fun to see what they do with it. My oldest daughter started a pro-life club at her high school. My second daughter just joined the pro-life club at her school, and my oldest son argues like an attorney, and I love it. So I know he's going to do good things with that. You know, you build a good heart, and you take that passionate heart that young people have, and you guide it in the right way, and hopefully that teenage stuff doesn't last too long with you, but they turn it around on the culture, and they use it in a really fantastic way. So, and my husband is very supportive, and I have to say, if it weren't for him, I couldn't do any of this, because it takes a team. And he's very patient with me. So today he was like, you got everything, you're going, okay, good luck. We're praying, you're going, okay, keep moving, because the six-year-old's going to start crying again, you know. So, yes, God bless him. Thank you, God, for a husband like Tim. So so the accidental activist, after the life issues and the marriage issues, we moved to religious liberty issues with the whole Obamacare thing and the HHS mandate. And then I was doing big rallies, and we'd have like hundreds of people there in Orange County. And then I got involved with things that would impact my children. So first it was a Catholic vacation Bible camp, right? Totally Catholic, where they get to go to adoration every day. There's mass every day. It's totally built for the family. It's down at Santiago Retreat Center in the summertime. It's been running for 11 years now. And you know what? We built that, and we still go every year as a family. My kids help build the whole thing every year. We love it. And then recently in my pro-life work, it was a friend who's a non-denominational Christian. She reached out to me and she said, hey, we got to do this pro-life protest, and we got to come up with a theme. And I said, okay, great. What's your theme? And she said, well, have you heard about what Planned Parenthood is up to in the classroom? I'm like, what is it now? I mean, they're always up to something nefarious in our classrooms. And what's new? And she had children in public schools, 5 of them. And she said, well, it's this sex ed thing. I mean, it's terrible. It's pornographic. And I said, that's really weird. And they're allowing that? She's like, yeah, they passed a law. I said, they passed a law for pornographic sex ed? And she said, well, yeah, they passed a law, and it was effective in 2016, and now all these schools have to use this sex ed curriculum. And she's like, we're stuck. There's nothing we can do. Well, I heard that, and the mama bear in me just roared. We have a legislature in this state. It's probably not a secret to you, but we have a legislature in this state that is absolutely, positively on the assault to destroy our families, our children, not only their physical bodies, but their moral, they're trying to morally corrupt them as well. So it's our families and our culture. Our church won't survive this. Do you know that statistics say, this is from the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate, that if a child never spends 1 year in a Catholic school from grades K through 12, their likelihood of leaving the church? Anybody want to take a guess? What's the percentage? What's the likelihood you're going to leave the church if you never spend a year in a Catholic school? 95%. 95%. And I don't want to pick a fight, but what is our church doing about that? You know, the church has been through a lot of trouble, and we've been through some tumultuous times, but Bishop Robert Barron wrote a letter recently, and I don't know if you've had a chance to read it, but it's lovely. But in the end, what he says is, it's us, laity, we have to become the church. We have to become the virtuous members of the church that raise up the virtuous priests of the church, that raise up the culture that can be more virtuous again. It starts with us. It starts with us. And so I'm going to share a little bit with you about what's in this California Healthy Youth Act and what this curriculum's like. I don't want to get into too many details because we are in the house of God. And there are things that I cannot repeat in here. It would be an absolute offense to our Lord. So I will try and be as creative as I can. Without being offensive. And then the rest you're going to have to go find for yourself. I wanted to be able to put some of this, project some of this, but I don't have the right kind of cord, and I'm sorry about that. The law is called the California Healthy Youth Act. It mandates that comprehensive sexuality education be taught mandatory grades 7 through 12, at least once in junior high and at least once in high school. What you need to know is that the content of this law is not what you think it is, okay? It's not what you think it is. And then when they use the words comprehensive and sexual, you're thinking, well, right, the birds and the bees and all that sort of stuff. No, they've taken our language, they've redefined the terms, and they have created a whole new meaning behind the words they're using, and we don't know it. And this was perpetuated primarily by the International Planned Parenthood Federation of America's, International Planned Parenthood Federation, which is the international arm, okay, of Planned Parenthood. It's a three-part problem. The law is a big problem. But what goes beyond the law is the curriculum. When you see what it shows up like in the classroom, oh my goodness, will your blood boil. And then beyond that, the State Department of Education doubled down on this whole crazy train, and they just adopted, this is your state tax dollars at work here. The California Department of Education, with your state tax dollars, just approved a health framework. And in that framework, as young as kindergarten, they're challenging children's gender stereotypes in public schools. Four-year-olds, transitional kindergarten. I've actually seen undercover video from daycare workers who went to a county training on this, on inclusivity. They're telling, daycare workers and preschool teachers. These are the kinds of books you can read. You wouldn't believe the myriad of the beautiful picture books. The content is absolute trash. They are trying to convince our children that you can be any gender that you imagine. There's not just two. There's tons of them. And because parents don't know what you are when you're born, they guess. They look at your body and they guess. I'm not joking you. That's the language in these books. So know that the problem comes in three parts, right? You have the laws, which are a problem. There are multiple laws. You've probably been fighting them for years yourself. How about that bathroom bill, right? So now kids in schools can use whatever bathroom of whatever they identify with. What chaos. I'm sorry, what girl really wants to be opening up that private space to members of the opposite sex? She doesn't. This is activists at work. This is not what kids want. The laws, the curriculum, which is really bad, and then the health framework. Okay, so we have this big three-part problem. The words, comprehensive, as if what we taught before was limited and people didn't know how to procreate. Right, last time I checked, sex was meant for the procreation of children and the unification of couples, yes? Okay, this is comprehensive in a whole different sort of way. Okay, what they're talking about is explicit, graphic, making sure you have skill sets, that you know how to perform things and you know how to use things. Sexuality with a weird focus on pleasure, not the biological realities of procreation or fetal development. This is not a science-based program at all. They say it is, but it's not. And really, they call it education, but it's absolutely indoctrination. They have no tolerance for your children's conservative ideas or religious values. In fact, if your child should mention them in a class, they're likely to be told that, oh, Susie, we don't talk like that around here because we need to be inclusive. We need to involve everybody. And so those are damaging. Those are gender stereotypes. Did you believe that a boy is a boy and a girl is a girl? Or that a man should marry a woman? Oh, no. Diego, we don't talk like that. We don't say those things here. So watch out for your public schools. What's happening now is you have International Planned Parenthood who have redefined all the terms. Comprehensive sexuality education in their eyes includes gender, pleasure, diversity and relationships, HIV, violence, and sexual rights. Sexual rights? Oh yes, a new term. What does it mean? It means that from birth, children actually have the right to sexual pleasure and we all just need to get over it. That's what they want us to believe. That's what they want us all to take, hook, line, and sinker. So they use this term sexual rights. They're saying that this is a human right for all, internationally. And then they're turning this into the civil rights of the day, which is why we have the Equality Act. So please, 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 if you do nothing else, please leave here and be a little bit more proactive in calling your legislators federally and statewide and telling them to stop this business, that this is actually an affront to those who have moral values. It's unconstitutional. It should be, but we'll see. The world's going crazy. one organization by the name of SECIS. It's the Sexuality Information and Education. It's not coalition. I have the wrong word in my head. Of the United States, anyway. They said they're using sex ed for social change, full stop. That's what they said in a tweet in January, February of this year. They actually intend to use this curriculum to turn your kids into Marxists. What? Yes, absolutely. Comprehensive sexuality education has some hallmarks that are very damaging. I'm going to share them with you. One, they're taught to children. They don't ask for your consent, and they make sure that the laws are set up such that you don't need to say yes. You're automatically opted in. What you can do now is opt out. So if you have kids in public schools, and this is coming, and I will tell you, even if you have kids in grades younger than 7, with this new health framework, that kind of indoctrinating content is going to be coming into those younger grades. They're not going to be talking about graphic sex. It's going to be the gender ideology that you'll see. They're trying to prepare kids for what's coming later. There is an obsessive focus on sexual pleasure and every kind of sexual act, and I will leave it at that for now. It promotes and encourages exploration and experimentation with gender identity, and that's an active promotion. You may have seen on your campuses the rainbow flags everywhere, safe schools, welcoming schools. Look, this is not a war against individual people. We're often accused of that, but we need to learn not only what our faith teaches, but how to speak about it well so that we can represent the faith well. This is a bad public health policy. This is not about individual people. So we have to be very clear about that. And we have no business pushing this on children. So even if this country allows for you to have whatever expression you want to have, and you get to do that in this country, it's a free country, we should not be pushing this on children. It's dangerous. We're teaching children how to give and receive consent for sex. That is off the chain, but it is true. They think it's going to protect kids from predators. We think they want to use it to get access to children for sex. It also exposes children to written and visual pornography. And if you were to go onto a Facebook page like Informed Parents of California or like Alliance to Protect Children or to the California Family Council website or Protect Our Kids Now, I mean, there's a lot of organizations out there that are sharing information about this, and you would see proof of the curricular pages, and it's absolutely astounding. So beware, that's what's coming. There are a lot of presentations that the law states that we have to positively promote every gender expression, every gender identity, and every kind of coupling. So if you're a Catholic and you have kids in public schools, there's really going to be no way to get around this, because you can opt out of what's in the sex ed unit, but you can't opt out if any of these topics are brought up in any other part of the curriculum. So if they read a storybook in kindergarten, which they have done, I don't know if you heard about that, Rockland, California, 2 years ago, a kindergarten child and the teacher obviously collaborated on this. He came to school in boys' clothes. The teacher read a few books to the kids. He went into the bathroom and came out as a girl, and he was reintroduced with his new name, wearing girls' clothes, and that was that from this point forward. Parents were never notified. Children were distressed and stressed for... Some of them still are. One little girl, she went home and she was telling her mommy about this, and her mom was so upset. And the little girl went and took a bath, and she caught her reflection in the mirror, and her hair was all slicked back, and she screamed, "Mommy, no! Am I becoming a boy? I don't want to become a boy! What are we doing to these 5-year-old little kids? It's not fair. It's not right. We have to stand up and fight." So, you know what's in this curriculum. I mean, I have all these pages here with all these proofs. I don't even really want to go into all this, but I'll tell you a couple of other things because it's really important. There's a lot of medically inaccurate information. The law says this stuff's supposed to be medically accurate. Is the gender-bred person medically accurate? Is there any? There's no science. No science behind gender theory. So, no. There's no medical science. Also, we're teaching children, to use condoms for everything. And I'm sorry that I'm saying that out loud in a church. Sorry, Lord. These aren't even FDA approved for certain activities. So we're teaching our children non-FDA approved uses for things that they never should be doing that are very dangerous for their whole life health. And this is all in the name of freedom. We know that these are false claims of freedom. These are counterfeits, that these are going to lead our children into traps of spiritual, physical, and emotional hell. Right? So we have to do something about this. So when I heard about all this and I started digging into this, I thought, oh my goodness, this, I didn't have kids in public school. I didn't think this was my fight. I said, wow, you guys really got a bat over there in public school. And I had no intention of engaging in this, but the good Lord saw to it that friend after friend after friend came forward and said, we need you. We need your enthusiasm. We need your ability to communicate. We need your help. Oh, hello, sweetheart. Welcome to the world. Here's the thing. We know that this isn't right. And you know what? If I hadn't been informed by those documents of the church and all those endowed groups and knowing what my feminine genius is, I don't know, I suppose you're probably going to talk about this over and over and over again today, but the feminine genius is that thing that God put inside of a woman, that unique empathy where she sees people with her heart. She can't just look at a person with her eyes. So when I see suffering children, they're not mine, but they're in the public schools. There's 6.2 million of them, by the way. There's a whole spiritual holocaust going on in our public schools today, and I can't sit here and do nothing. And God got a hold of my heart, and he said, yes, your feminine genius is needed, and it's a really difficult juggling act, but I'm doing what I can. But I want to appeal to the hearts of every woman in this room and every man, too, because there are words here in these documents I want to share with you that pertain to you and your vocation as well. There's a model for us. There's a model for us. Her name is Mary. She lived a credible witness of action in the public sphere that is beautiful and effective. And I'm going to share some of that with you, some of how my reflections on the wedding at Cana have inspired me to take action. Because the culture would tell you, I'm a woman, hear me roar. You're a feminist, you can do anything. You can be smart, you don't need a man. You can, you know, whatever. It's a bunch of garbage. God created them male and female. In his image, he created them. And he gave us this complementarity for a reason. It's good for us. It's the fall that messed everything up. And it's our job to continue to work out in the flesh, here and now, the redemption of that complementarity. And it's tough sometimes. I mean, I've been married 23 years. I get it. You know, but we have to do that. And we have to do that for the future of the church. So you may not be hearing a lot from the church on this issue, but I feel like that means that it's time for us to take up the flag, you know? We need to study, we need to be informed, and we need to take on the truth and bring it forward. So I'm going to share with you some things that that really impacted me. First is from the Apostolic Exhortation, Familiaris Consortio. This was written by Pope John Paul II in 1981. Gosh, every time I look at the dates of his encyclicals, I just think, wow, wow, wow. Boy, did he have a direct connection, right? He knew exactly what was coming. Here's what it says in Familiaris Consortio on the topic of education. I'm just going to pull out a few points. If you go look up the document, I recommend looking at paragraphs 36 to 40. That's specific to education. And here it says, since parents have conferred life on their children, they have a most solemn obligation to educate their offspring. Hence, parents must be acknowledged as the first and foremost educators of their children. We hear that a lot, but let's put it in context. The role as educators is so decisive that scarcely anything can compensate for their failure in it. Catholic parents, scarcely anything can compensate for our failure in it. I have hair standing up on my arms right now. Education in love, as self-giving, is also the indispensable premise for parents called to give their children a clear and delicate sex education. it's mentioned in here. It's like he knew California was going to do this. This is great. Faced with a culture that largely reduces human sexuality to the level of something commonplace, or worse, since it interprets and lives it in a reductive and impoverished way by linking it only with the body and with selfish pleasure, the educational service of parents must aim firmly at a training in the area of sex that is truly and fully personal. For sexuality is an enrichment of the whole person, body, emotions, and soul, and it makes manifest its inmost meaning and leading that person to the gift of self-love. If we don't understand that we are made in the image of God, made, we came from love, we were made out of love, we are made to love others and be a gift of ourselves here, and so that we can return to love God Himself in heaven. If we don't understand that, we don't teach our children that, it seems like a very temporary arrangement, so why wouldn't any sort of behavior be okay? So it's really, really important that we dive a little deeper in our faith and that we really try and demonstrate to our kids in meaningful ways what it means to be a gift of self. Can you help your brother? Can you get the diaper for mommy? Would you help me do this? Work alongside each other. Be selfless. Help the other. That's a simple way we can teach our children to be a gift of self, starting from when they're really little. Sex education, which is a basic right and duty of parents, must always be carried out under their attentive guidance, whether at home or in educational centers chosen and controlled by them. In this regard, the church reaffirms the law of subsidiarity. That's a big word, but if you don't have familiarity with it, I recommend look it up on a Catholic website. What is subsidiarity? And learn about that. It's really important. It could be a long discourse, so I won't get into it now, but basically you have the most proximate authority over your children. So in the context of subsidiarity, the school is bound to observe this when it cooperates in sex education by entering into the same spirit that animates the parents. Do the public schools in California animate your spirit? Do they have the same spirit as you? I don't think so, but it sounds like we're called to ensure that they do. In this context, education for chastity is absolutely essential. It's a virtue that develops a person's authentic maturity and makes them capable of respecting and fostering the nuptial meaning of the body, the idea that we're meant to be a gift to one another in marriage. Indeed, Christian parents discerning the signs of God's call will devote special attention and care to education in virginity or celibacy as a supreme gift. You may not know this, but because of the California Healthy Youth Act, the state of California says abstinence education is absolutely not allowed in California. Not allowed. We have to change that. It's our job to change that. It's not allowed. They can't teach it. I am working with Obria Medical Group right now to try and bring federally funded abstinence education into public schools. I don't know. Are we going to have to give the money back? I mean, this is really, really a bad situation. So, I mean, we need you. We need you. We need you engaged on this. And it doesn't matter if you don't have kids in public school. If you're a grandparent or you're someone who's concerned, you pay taxes in that district, you can say something about this. You have a right to step up and fight back. Let me see what else is here. The church is firmly opposed to an often widespread form of imparting sex information disassociated from moral principles. Well, we got that situation. And that would merely be an introduction to the experience of pleasure and a stimulus leading to the loss of serenity while still in the years of innocence by opening the way to vice. Well, that's what our schools are up to today. They have definitely opened our children's minds to vice, and it's really important that we stand up for them. I'm going to read just one or two more lines from an older document, and then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about this whole wedding at Cana thing and what Mary's taught me, and then we'll wrap it up. From an old encyclical from the late 1800s called Rerum Novarum, and this was written by Pope Leo XIII. And again, I think these documents are amazing, and I know they're hard to read, which is why I want you to find some friends and read them together, but please do it, because there's a lot to be learned here. He, as in the Pope, oh wait, that's not my page, here it is. So he's talking about families and education here as well, and he's talking about the general culture. Remember, this is like 1896 or something. This is a really, really long time ago. Parents must strain every nerve, in quotations, to ward off the invasion and strive manfully to have and to hold exclusive authority to direct the education of their offspring as it is fitting. Pope Leo XIII we should strain every one of our nerves to ensure that our rights are not stripped away they are right now. Strain every nerve. Oh, it sounds painful. And he says it is also pernicious, which means really evil, to remove from the family the capacity to educate their children in religiously oriented schools. How many of us can afford Catholic education today? What are we going to do about that? We need to make way for that. One last line here. Sorry, I think that's my Angelus. My call to pray the Angelus. This last note here is also very important. He was talking about sex education here, Pope Leo. Such education as Leo had in mind had almost vanished. I just want to make sure I got the right quote. Yeah, this is the one. Even from parochial schools. So good Catholic education based on the classics has almost vanished from parochial schools back in the 1800s. Where could we possibly be today? But the more the enemies of religion exert themselves to offer the uninformed, especially the young, such instruction as darkens the mind and corrupts the morals, he said, the more actively should we endeavor that not only a suitable and solid method of education, may flourish. But basically he's saying, the more the state encroaches on our rights, the more we should be fighting back. So I just want to appeal to you to please do what you can to engage on this issue. The California Healthy Youth Act is a pernicious assault against our children in the classroom, against our families, and against the culture and the church. Yesterday or the day before, the state legislature in California passed ACR 99, a resolution that makes it the official state position that Christians, are the reason why LGBTQ people are depressed and committing suicide. Go look it up, ACR 99. They think the idea of getting therapy to help you deal with your unwanted same-sex attraction is absolute hogwash. They think it's like pixie dust. The good Lord wants to redeem every human soul from the depth of every worldly chain that exists in our hearts. He is not above freeing anyone from same-sex attraction. We all have something that we're struggling with. And I told a young man once who told me, he said, he saw my Endow books, and I didn't know him very well, but he's always at this place. We go on vacation every year. And he saw my Endow books, and it said, the letter to women, and on the first page it says, we live in a world that's really confusing. It's confusing to know how to love. As a man, as a woman, how to love in the world. And he read those lines, and he said, I don't know what that's all about, but we got to talk. And I said, what do you mean? Okay, we'll talk. And he said, yeah, I don't know what that's all about, but God only knows why I'm attracted to men, he said. And I said, okay. So I sat down, and I said, tell me. And you know, he started to talk to me, and he felt safe talking to me about his same-sex attraction. And he said he didn't want it. And he had kind of stopped having relationships with men. But that it's really hard because the old community doesn't really accept you because you're not in it. And then like everybody else is like, dude, are you gay? And so he like doesn't really feel like he's got a place. But we have to stand in that gap. We have to be Christ to people who are in that situation. I told him, I said, look, I'm struggling with stuff on the inside. You don't know what my sins are. But it doesn't mean my sin is any less than yours, my struggle is any worse than yours, that God can't take care of mine and take care of yours. It may not be obvious by looking at me. Maybe I don't have mannerisms that maybe are a dead giveaway as to what I might be struggling with. But you know what? I've got them. And the Lord's working on me too. And he wants to work on you. Redemption is for all of us. It's not just for those of us who look like we're trying to practice it right. It's for every one of us. So we need to stand in that gap. So how about the wedding at Cana? What does Mary teach me? what am I doing in this activist world? I mean, like, what is the point, you know, dealing with the church, dealing with legislators? I didn't sign up to do this. I was like a homeschool mom. I'm like, well, I did get a degree in public relations, but really, I'm like, I haven't used that in ages, but God put it back to work. So, so I started really reflecting, right? I had all this knowledge from the encyclicals and from all the endowed groups and all that fellowship, and my heart is full. My head is full. I got a lot of knowledge. I've got a lot of skill sets. I've got a lot of love in my life. I'm really, really blessed. And the forgiveness and mercy of God, thanks be to God, in my own life. But Mary, at the wedding of Cana, this is what I see. This is what I try and do as a result of Mary's model to me. At the wedding of Cana, she's in a public place. She's a woman. She doesn't have any position or authority, and neither do I. She has to internalize the situation and take it in. So I try and do the same. She must, being full of grace, must, every thought of hers must have been a prayer. So I try and make my thoughts like that when I'm thinking about the problem. Lord Jesus, you know this is the situation. You know these are the people in the school district. Lord God, please show me the way. Who can help me with the situation? Who can help me impact this for the children? You know, it's a prayer. Everything you do before you act is a prayer. Everything. Keep going to Mass. Keep going to the sacraments. Try and keep your life as virtuous as possible, but act. So pray. And then when I looked at Mary and the wedding at Cana, I thought, well, she went to Jesus. That's the right thing to do. In prayer, go to Jesus. And he said, woman, what concern of is it of mine? You know what? I get that a lot. I get that a lot when you call a school district. They're like, well, that's a law that's made at the state level. You got to go to the state. I'm sorry. That's not our business. Then you go to the state and they say, well, that's a local issue. Your school district has control. No concern of mine. No concern of mine. No concern of mine. How about all those family members who don't want to hear about this stuff on Facebook anymore? No concern of mine. Nobody, you know, like, but don't be upset when you get that. You know why? Because the Blessed Mother got that from her own son. It's okay. It doesn't mean God's saying no. It doesn't mean he's not going to open a door. It doesn't mean grace doesn't abound in the situation. It just happens. I think that is in there for a reason. It gives me a lot of hope that Mary faced that with Jesus. He wasn't trying to be rude, I don't think. It's just real. It was just real. So she gets that word from her son, and she contemplates more what could be the solution. And you know what she does? She goes to the one in the situation who should be the one who does something about it. She's at a wedding. You go to the steward and the legislator. Go to your legislators in the state, in the church. Go to your priests. Go to your bishops in the family. Talk to your husbands. Okay, there's someone who should be doing something about this. That's why we're in this place, because we've all gotten lazy. Really, really lazy. Slowly over time, and then sort of like really quickly. So we're in this situation because the people who should be doing the right things aren't doing the right things. Go pray through who that person is. Go to that person and tell them to do the right thing. That sounds like too simple, but that's the model. And it's working. It's working. I don't have any relationships inside the Diocese of Orange. I didn't like have other friends that already worked there or anything. It was a Mormon man who opened up a meeting he had with our chancellor who said, all right, look, you've been really persistent. If you want to come to this meeting, it's at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. That's how I got to speak to my diocese. Weird. I just went to the guy who already had a meeting with them, and I said, hey, so you're going to go to a meeting with the diocese. Are you going to bring a Catholic? And he was like, no answer. So anyways, do you know anything about what the church teaches, like on, you know, marriage and the whole sex thing? Because I could give you some information. Sure, thanks. Happy to take a resource. I mean, I hammered this guy like 6 times, and finally he said, you've been persistent. Why don't you come? And that's how I got there. I didn't mean to, like, I'm so cool and I have all these friends in the diocese. The Archdiocese of San Francisco, we hosted a rally on the steps of the Capitol in Sacramento in March. 600 people were there. It was awesome. Legislators came. We've had former homosexuals come and speak at our rallies. They talk about the redemption of Jesus Christ and the mercy they've received and the freedom they have now. It's a beautiful thing. But some people from the Archdiocese of San Francisco were told, go to that rally and see what's happening there. Is it credible? Are they wingnuts? And you know what? They found out about me. And they said, oh, one of their leaders is Catholic. And that's how I got in contact with the Archdiocese of San Francisco. I'm begging anybody who can do something about this to do it, but I don't have connections. The Catholic Conference, I got a 3-minute meeting in the hallway of the Capitol with him through somebody else, and I didn't think it was a really fruitful first meeting. But we're working together now on legislation to start protecting and rolling back some of the elements of this law. Look out for SB 673 in January. SB 673, it provides a little more transparency. It would require school districts to have to put the content of the curriculum on their website so you would know exactly what they're teaching. So they don't want you to see that, so they don't want this law. Okay, the Democrats have already told us it's dead on arrival. Come on, but maybe not with your help, because you can do something about it. If you know anybody who lives in Senator Connie Leva's district, get a letter-writing campaign. She's the education leader there in the Senate. We need letters and phone calls and people just hammering these people when they're home on recess and letting them know. Parents want transparency. Parents want to be able to opt our children into these programs, not just opt out. We get to say, if they're little, whether you get to teach this to our kids. Give us that authority. We deserve it, and we were given it by God. They had no reason to take it away in the first place. Tell them so. I read it to you, and I told you where to find that information. Rerum Navarro and Familiares Consortium. Okay? They're in there. And if you want to find the exact quote, you know, give me your email and I'll send it to you. But you make sure that you stand up for your rights, because God gave them to you, not the state. And you let these legislators know, no, these are our kids. We have authority over them, and you will not teach this garbage to them. We can do this. Do you know, I heard from some policy people in Washington, D.C. recently. They said, well, we were having a big meeting and we were saying, hey, how do we solve this problem of the law in California? And all of these D.C. lawyers said, there's really no political answer. There's no, like, legal answer right now. You pretty much would have to have, like, a grassroots game. It would have to be, like, a parent revolt. So you are the answer to this problem. I'm here to ask you to do something about it because I know you can. Even all the D.C., like, lawyer policy people know that the power is right here in this room and in your neighborhoods and in your families and, in your school district. They don't have it. We do. So let's go take it back. Finally, I love that Mary trusts that after she goes to the steward and she says, do whatever he tells you, miracles happen. Miracles happen. You know, she wasn't responsible for that miracle, and she was so self-disinterested, right? This wasn't about her saying, oh, I know, nobody knew what to do, so, you know, I had to go over there and tell him, you know, hey, guess what, steward, yeah. You know. She doesn't do that. And she's also not bossy. And she's not a, you know, I mean, like, I don't know. I went into a church one time, and we were doing an Endow information meeting, and I won't mention the parish, but the priest heard that we were doing educating on the nature and dignity of women. And he goes, oh, no, no, yeah, you know what, the women are in charge around here. That's what he said. And I went, oh, no, Father, that's not what this is about. It's not about women being in charge. It's about women being Marian. And when women are Marian, they're very effective. They're not bossy. I was like, they're just informed and they're prayerful and they're self-possessed. And it's beautiful. I'm like, they know how they can use their genius in the world. And he just, okay. Okay. And I'm like, it's called Letter to Women. Anyway, don't assume that your parish priest knows all this stuff. Also, don't assume, I know for a fact, the theological errors of gender ideology was not a class that any of our parish priests took in seminary. I'm sure of that. This is a really scary topic. Priests don't want to talk about this from the pulpit or anywhere. It involves sex, and they really don't want to talk about this out loud. Let's encourage them. Let's encourage our diocese to give the priests and bishops that we know and love, who lead us. They are our shepherds. Let's encourage our bishops to give them the kind of resources they need so they can lead us well. Let's encourage our diocese to bring the kinds of resources that would help families that have no other choice but to put their kids in public schools. Give us resources. Help us. Tell us, what can we use in our own families? What are you going to offer here in the parish? What sort of diocesan-wide programs can you offer so that we have some backup? We got something to come in and heal the wounds of what's going on in public schools in our culture. So I'll close up with just two thoughts, and that is, I'm going to find my note here, is so important. Again, this one is from Familiaris Consortio. If ideologies opposed to the Christian faith are taught in the schools, the family must join with other families, if possible, through family associations, and with all its strength and with wisdom, help the young not to depart from their faith. In this case, the family needs special assistance from pastors of souls who must never forget that parents have the inviolable right to entrust their children to the ecclesial community. We should be able to entrust our children and the care of our children in this grave moral quandary that we're in. We should be able to trust the church to say, please help us raise them. This is awful. Please help us inoculate them from this cultural garbage pail. And that's in the church documents. You may not see that out there. If you want those references, email me. I will get them to you so that you can bring them to your parish priest and to your bishop or whoever else you know who has any influence anywhere. If you know Catholic teachers, if you know Catholics who are serving in administration in schools as principals, superintendents, school board members, take these things to them. Encourage them to do the right thing, especially if they're Catholic, because this is their teaching. Encourage them to do the right thing. Pray for them. And finally, the last thing I want to say is this. As wives and mothers, we can't solve every problem. We are busy. We have families to raise. Some of us are working and doing courageous things, you know, caring for elderly parents and like just juggling everything, or children with special needs and all of that. But every woman can be something beautiful for God. And that's a little bit like, you know, what Mother Teresa said, and a little bit like what St. Catherine of Siena said. But Mary Ann Glendon, she was the ambassador to the Holy See, like around the time that Reagan was the president. And she asked Pope John Paul II, could you tell us more about this feminine genius? When we need to hear more about this. And I'm told that his response was, we will know more when women live it. So, ladies, I just depart with prayers and thanksgiving for your attentiveness. And just, I will be praying for you that your genius would be manifest in this situation and that we'll be able to turn this culture around with your help. God bless you and God bless your day.